Welcome to Catholic Sports View on Immaculate Heart Radio. A look at the athletes and coaches who shape the Trinity League. Exploring where athletics meets faith. Now, here is your host, Bob Gibson.
And kicking off the show this week, we are honored to have the commissioner of the CIF Southern Section, and that is Rob Weigod. Commissioner, thank you for joining us here on Catholic Sports View.
You're welcome, Bob. Nice to talk with you.
The first thing was I was doing some research into your career, and you've been in athletics for many years here in the Southern California area, but I wanted to go to a quote that I read in a story that you said a while back, and you said, "We are in the business of making memories." And I thought, you know, what a cool thing for a commissioner to kind of say. And there really isn't that what it's all about for the kids that you oversee in the CIF that are playing athletics, that you want them to go away with good memories in their careers?
Absolutely. No question about that. Because, you know, again, we really believe that the high school athletic experience is that classroom for life, and what these student athletes go through and experiences that they have, being exposed to the great teacher coaches and administrators and the folks we have out there that lead our schools, you know, that these are the memories for their lives and these are the lessons for their lives, and that, you know, they're going to go forward from the time they've spent in high school and as student athletes and really help them, you know, for their future as adults. And so we're dedicated to that. That's our primary purpose and focus. And so, you know, it's true. I mean, we make memories, and that's maybe the greatest part of what we get to do.
You're in the middle of your sixth year now as the commissioner. Correct. Do you feel like you're settled in to the job?
Oh, certainly. It's much more comfortable than my first year or second year even. It's, you know, I was an assistant commissioner here for 11 years. It was a part of a lot of things that happened and a lot of things that I learned and was able to grow. But there's still, you know, there's no real substitute for sitting in the chair. And so when you do, you know, you just don't have the precedents or the previous situations and scenarios that may have happened when you were the commissioner, you know. But after 2, 3, 4 years, you know, then those become some of your foundation going forward, you know, some of the things that you know you can draw upon experiences, and it certainly does make you feel more comfortable.
You know, it's obviously a huge job. You've got by far the biggest section in the state of California, upwards of almost 600 schools. How easy or how hard is it to oversee a section that stretches, you know, so far and wide?
I think my first thought, you know, I don't know any different. I mean, I grew up as a student athlete in the Southern Section, and all my work as a teacher and coach and athletic director was at Southern Section schools. And of course, now being an assistant commissioner and commissioner here, all my experiences with the Southern Section. So I don't know any different. We're very proud of that. I think we're very proud of the competition that we offer. I think we're really proud of our diversity and all the different opportunities that we can offer. And then I guess I would offer this. In many ways, it's easier to communicate with people now than it was 20, 25 years ago.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, the distances that stretched, you know, our section from far and wide, you know, I'm much more in touch with, I think, our schools, you know, all over than I think my predecessors were, you know, 25 years ago. So, you know, like I said, in many respects, technology and the ability to communicate may makes our section a little smaller.
Your office sits in Orange County, of course, in Los Alamitos. How much fun is it for you to get out to areas like Boron or Phelan or some of these areas that in some cases may not even have heard of?
Well, and that's the point. I think, you know, when you're in a position like this, I mean, the ability to meet people and to see so many great people doing great things for kids in all these other places as well. I mean, being a Long Beach guy and working in the area as a high school, you know, teacher, coach and all the rest, you know, I met a lot of good people in the area. But, you know, to get into a position like this one and just find these other people in anywhere, you know, that are in the same priorities, the same motivation, the same dedication to, you know, to giving back to young people and giving them opportunities to grow and learn. It's pretty inspiring to drive down a freeway and go, oh, well, that's one of our schools, and I know somebody there, or that's one of our schools, or that's one of our schools, and really understand that, you know, there's great people all over who do great things, and I don't think you can get that unless you're, you know, fortunate enough to be in a spot like I'm in.
Yeah, absolutely. Visiting with the commissioner of the CIF Southern Section, Rob Weigod, here on Catholic Sports View. You mentioned your predecessors, and of course, you worked under Dr. James Staunton. Before that was Dean Crowley, Stan Thomas before him. So a lot of good leadership has come through the Southern Section. What did you learn from your predecessors that made it maybe more comfortable to slide into the position when it was time for you to take the job?
Well, there's only been, I'm the ninth commissioner, and our organization's in its 104th year.
Right.
So being the ninth guy with only eight others that have ever had this job, I mean, it's overwhelming. I mean, to think about the tradition and the history of the organization. You might enjoy that every year since I became commissioner, I have the annual commissioner's lunch. And I'm very fortunate that Tom Burns, Ray Pletko, Dean Crowley, Jim Staunton, myself. So of the nine of us from the very start, five of us are still out there together. And we go to lunch every year in January. And, you know, it's a special group. I mean, no one can understand it as well as the gentlemen that are kind enough and supportive enough, you know, to get together with me. Beyond that, I mean, I'm in contact with all of them, different times, different things. You know, some of them still help us and work with us in various events and things that we do. They're incredible mentors, good friends, guys that really understand what this is. And they've instilled in me, you know, the tremendous responsibility that I have, which is to keep us going and to keep us advancing forward, keep progressing, you know, keep looking for better ways to do what we do. You know, I'm a lucky guy. I'm very lucky. They had a lot of vision. And they had a lot of hard work and effort, you know, to put us and put this organization in the place that it is. So we owe them a lot for what they've done. Huge responsibility. I take it very seriously.
Do you feel like your story is a special one because, you know, you really worked your way up from being a coach in the Long Beach area, certainly at Los Alamitos, where a lot of people probably got to first know your name on a bigger scale, and then to go into the office as an assistant commissioner and work your way into the commissioner spot. You know, you don't just become the commissioner overnight, right? I mean, a lot of work and a lot of time went into learning the ins and outs of this section for you to be able to, I would assume, comfortably say, yeah, this is a job that I want to tackle.
Well, sure. And, you know, being a football player at Long Beach Wilson High School as a student, do you think for one second I thought I was going to be the commissioner of the Southern Section? I mean, of course not. But I think that I do have, I think, something that resonates with people in that, you know, I have been at each step along the way. You know, I have been an assistant coach, a head coach, a social studies teacher, an athletic director, an assistant commissioner, a commissioner. I have been in all of those roles. And by going through those different experiences, certainly I take with me what I learned and what I, you know, wanted to do in those roles. And so, I think that's something that I know, you know, has served me well to have the understanding of each one of those particular, you know, jobs, if you want to call them that, or, you know, I was never a famous athlete. I was never going to be a college athlete. I knew that. I wasn't a coach who won 500 games and 10 championships. You know, I always, you know, I'm just a regular guy. But high school athletics changed my life, and it provided those memories and experiences that I knew that's something I wanted to still be part of. And so not being good enough to keep playing athletics in college or whatever, when I became a coach at 19 at my former high school, and I went back to start working as a coach, assistant football coach, as I was in college at the time, you know, I realized so quickly that first day that, you know, this is what I want to do. This substitutes the playing days. This substitutes what I missed about the sports experiences I had. And, you know, I've never missed a season since. I mean, I've been in one of the positions I mentioned earlier since I was 19 years old, and high school sports has been my life, and it's been something that I just really think is special. And so, you know, that's kind of my story that way. You know, I'm not a guy that, you know, achieved a lot of notoriety, you know, for my experiences myself, but I think being that kind of person maybe gives me a broader picture, you know, here. Sometimes our focus and a lot of times, you know, parents will talk or newspaper folks or others, you know, it's all about college scholarships or professional contracts and that's really not who the Southern Section is. We're looking at 400,000 student athletes out there in 24 sports for boys and girls, and a lot of those students will never play beyond high school, like me. They'll never go on beyond high school. So, you know, we're really focused on this incredibly large number of young people that we get a chance to make an impact on. And certainly we're proud of those that go on to college and goes to the professional and the Olympics. And our section is an incredible tradition and history of some of the greatest names that have ever been in the United States of America. But it's not really at the heart of who we are. We're a much more broad-based educational organization. And so that's the thing. I think maybe a guy like me that, you know, wasn't the superstar, maybe just has a little bit better appreciation sometimes of what the high school thing is about.
Rob Wygod, the commissioner of the Southern Section, taking a couple of moments to visit with us here on Catholic Sports View. You just mentioned, you led me right into my next question. You mentioned, all the athletes. One thing I like about what the Southern Section did just a couple of years ago is you not only did you celebrate your 100th anniversary, you guys really did it up. I mean, yeah, there was a list of the 100 greatest players in history. There was a big gala. There was just stuff going on all over the section to celebrate it. How important is it to celebrate the history of your right, of well, maybe the most storied section in the United States?
Well, I was a history major. You know, I got my bachelor's degree in history. So you talk about feeling responsibility. I mean, you know, it happened to be my second year as commissioner, and here was our 100th anniversary celebration. Right. And the responsibility that I felt to honor this organization and what it stood for and all the people that had contributed to the 100 years of what this organization achieved, you know, was that an overwhelming responsibility? And I appreciate what you said about how we went about it. I mean, I think we tried very, very hard to really, you know, give it what it was due. Putting that 100 list of athletes together was, I mean, wow.
Right? Having to narrow it down wasn't that easy, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, my goodness. I mean, we started out with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of names and had a great committee of people that helped us. And, you know, and then when you look at that list, I mean, sure, it is some of the greatest that have ever, you know, been in the United States of America. So, yeah, and then we did want to do something. We were very fortunate, you know, because of our relationship with Fox Sports West, that they did a great job of producing, a television program for us and working on that part, too. And so, yeah, I mean, it was pretty special. And you know, I think of many things that, you know, I've been able to be part of, I can't imagine being more proud of one thing. You know, that was very, very exciting for me and something I was really proud of, because I feel that we were able to try to capture, you know, the essence of this organization, its tradition, and honor it in a very respectful and meaningful way that really hopefully people took away from, you know, wow, a lot has gone on, a lot's happened, and this is something to celebrate. So, you know, we're really happy with that.
Quick break here on Catholic Sports View on Immaculate Heart Radio. We'll visit more with Rob Wygod when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back to Catholic Sports View here on Immaculate Heart Radio. I'm Bob Gibson, and we're visiting with the commissioner of the CIF Southern Section, and that is Rob Wygod. There's 10 sections in the CIF, and as we mentioned in our earlier segment, the Southern Section is by far the biggest. Do you feel a certain responsibility, pressure, I don't know if that's the right word, as maybe the leader of these 10 sections in the state of California?
Well, I do believe that we're a leader, and I think that's due to a lot of the work that's been done. You know, a lot of folks may not realize that the rules that govern our organization are actually made by the member schools in the organization, not by me or anybody else who works for the organization. But, you know, I think we have been a leader. I think we've done a lot of things that I know in our competitive equity playoffs that we are you know, working through right now. I've had Louisiana, I've had Wisconsin, I've had Nebraska. I mean, I've had states around the country have contacted us to find out what we're doing. I think around the state, I've got great relationships with the other commissioners, with those that work in the state office in Sacramento. There is a lot of help that we can offer because of the size of our section and the number of different things that we, you know, that present themselves in our particular section, that we can, you know, fill that role. And we are leaders. I really truly believe that we are. And that gets reinforced a little bit when you go around to, you know, we had a conference of all the Western states, 11 Western states, that was in September. You know, when we come to those kinds of meetings and so forth, you know, you start discussing what everybody's doing around these different states, and you find that we're ahead in a lot of different things. We're ahead in a lot of areas in the technology part of this business and what we've been doing in respect to the way that we're communicating and the way we're, you know, going through the processes and the things that we need to do and the business we conduct with our schools. I'm proud of what we do. I'm proud of how our organization's functioning and the services we're providing for our membership. And so because of that, you know, certainly we would be happy to share what we do with others and hope that they could see some things that we're doing that could help them.
You know, obviously what you do is not without controversy at times. You know, the transfer rules always seem to be something that's in play and talked about, and it always makes good fodder for us in the media, certainly. I feel like that now there's sort of a good hold on what these rules are, and I think there's an equitable, way to kind of handle it now. But I feel like there's more more direction now in what is an okay transfer and maybe, you know, what is not?
Well, I think statewide, the CIF, I think we've taken some steps that have really, you know, people, and sometimes in the media or whatever, others, they believe that the role would be to reduce the number of transfers, or we should have bylaws that really strictly limit and reduce transfer numbers. Well, there's a couple of thoughts there real quick. I mean, in a state like California and with legislatures and courts and others that you know, pay attention to what's happening with us as a high school sports organization, that's difficult. You know, what we might like to do as an organization doesn't necessarily fit with where legislators are, you know, those who authorize us to do this job. So we have to always kind of keep that in mind. I mean, that's present. But in terms of it, then, you know, we're really looking at the best ways to manage, you know, a reality, which is that, you know, parents and students will choose to transfer schools. They will choose to go to a different school where they think it's going to be a better situation. So, you know, with that as a reality, you know, how could we best be consistent, be fair, apply relevant bylaws to that process, you know, allow for those who have legitimate reasons, legitimate family changes and moves of residence and things that, you know, result in a student transferring schools, along with those who just say, you know, it didn't work well for me on the baseball team at school A, and I want to go to school B because maybe I have a better chance to play baseball at school B. I think we have to keep all of those in mind, you know, in terms of how the bylaws apply. And again, you know, do our best to manage it, to make it understandable and to work through it with consistency and fairness. I just want to say very quickly, Bob, you know, there's a sense sometimes that there's this huge number of transfers that take place, and we get a lot of information from the state CIF because they track this and control it. We have approximately 800,000 student athletes in the state, statewide, and of that number, about 15,000 transferred schools last year. 15,000, and that translates to less than 2%.
Yeah, that's really a small number when you look at it. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I don't know that people always realize that because obviously they read about it or they hear about high-profile cases or things like that. But when you're talking about an 800,000 student pool and only, you know, not only, but less than 2% are actually changing schools in a particular school year, and of those less than 2%, some of those 15,000, they're making valid moves. I mean, a student and their family, dad, mom gets a new job, and the family moves. Well, then that student is transferring schools, but, you know, that's because of a new job in a new city. So I think, you know, 15,000 is a lot. Our section gets approximately 6,500 to 7,000 a year. It's less than 1 in 10 and even less than, you know, 0.2 of 10. So it's pretty low.
And I think some of that too stems from the public versus private school thing, which you know full well. You know, the public school, the neighborhood school is always going to say, hey, so and so private schools is trying to raid our players over here. But
yes.
You know,
yes.
A kid has every right to go get a private education as well as,
yes,
you know, staying in their neighborhood and getting their public education. So
that is correct. And you know, you'd be interested, Bob, if you ever saw some of the numbers. It's not always that perception. We have plenty of public schools that have a lot of transfers in and transfers out. You know, I could go through plenty of schools, whether they're public, private, you know, whatever direction, those transfers are everywhere. They're not just confined to, well, the you know, all the neighborhood public schools lose students to private schools. We've got, I always offer the private schools probably lose more transfers than they get.
That could very well be. You're absolutely right.
I think there's no question. I think there's no question. Private schools actually, you know, probably end up having more students that transfer out versus that transfer in. You know, and there's reasons for it. I mean, again, you know, there's other factors at play. But I will tell you, it's not a public-private issue so much. The rules are the same for public and private schools. And I won't tell you that there's a higher number of public or private schools that have more transfers than others. The numbers don't dictate that.
Visiting with Rob Weigott, he's the commissioner of the CIF Southern Section, the ninth commissioner in the history that goes all the way back to 1913 when the section was first founded. Commissioner Weigott, one of
That's
our focuses
okay.
here on Catholic Sports View, we focus on the Trinity League a lot here. That's really one of the gems of the Southern Section, obviously, is the Trinity League. You have so much going on, you know, there's so many good schools going on, but that Trinity really is a gem of the Southern Section here.
Well, again, it stands for a lot of things. It stands for a very highly competitive group of schools that, you know, that competition takes place over a variety of sports, and they're very, very high-quality programs. I've been fortunate enough to work with all of the principals and athletic directors, and I know many of the coaches at the Trinity League schools. Great respect for the jobs they do. I think there's a tremendous amount of pressure on the Trinity League schools. I think the coaches are under a tremendous amount of pressure. The leadership and administrations are. Very, very high expectations. I don't think they see themselves as better than anybody else. I think they see themselves as a group of schools that work well together, and they want to be an example of how to do it right and how to be competitive and how to do it, you know, respecting sportsmanship and ethics and character and all the other things that we, you know, really do want people to know that are part of this high school athletic experience. It's not just winning and losing. It's about how to conduct yourself the right way and how to be a good person of character. So I'd like to, you know, my experiences with the group, I think they definitely subscribe to those ideals as well.
We're not too far removed from one of your very busy seasons, and that is the chance to put together the playoff groupings for all the fall sports, which of course includes football, but not limited to just football. Plenty of other good sports that go on in the fall as well. But, you know, some changes were made in the last couple of years to try to bring more equity to playoffs. And then I mentioned not just in football, but are you happy so far? Kind of the new rules are in place to try to bring more equity to the postseason?
Well, we really are. I think this was a long time in you know, formulation and getting it put together, and certainly a lot of education and working with our schools and our membership to get everyone to see what, you know, what we were really trying to do here, which was to give as many schools as possible the opportunity to compete. The competition is tighter. The expectation of who is going to emerge from any particular contest is kind of now a little bit more in question, whereas sometimes, you know, you could look at a bracket and say, boy, I can pretty much tell you how this one's going to play out. You know, we were seeing that. And like I said, I think we're going to get a lot more of an indication at the end of this week once we begin with the boys water polo and the football. I think we'll start to see some more data for us to take a look at what we really do expect.
Closing moments here with CIA of Southern Session Commissioner Rob Weigert. I couldn't let you go without asking this question. You're a baseball guy. I'm a baseball guy. Are we ever going to see a state championship in the sport of baseball?
It's been in discussions. It's on the discussion stage. Obviously, the biggest issue of trying to go forward with anything like that, it first would come forward in a regional format.
Sure.
If it was going to happen first, it would be regional, north and south. Obviously, it's calendar. It's just a matter of, is there a way that something like that could be accomplished without playing into the middle of July?
Because it's the end of the school year, right?
Exactly. So, you know, there are some changes. You know, a lot of our schools are starting earlier. The sports calendars are going to start shifting. They're all going to start moving forward. Our sports calendars are going to do the same. So, yeah, I mean, potentially, you know, it could be out there. I think we'd love to see it. I just know that the very first question anybody would have is, well, if you're finishing Southern Section Championships on June 5th, you know, the first Saturday in June, how many more weeks are you going to need to do a regional and state baseball championship? You know, are you going to be playing on June 26th? And obviously, schools would have been out for well over a month, and I'm not sure that that's the kind of environment that our schools and even our student-athletes and their families, I mean, that's just,
right.
By the time school is over, I think we all understand we probably should have high school athletics be over as well.
Right, exactly.
So we got some work to do, you know, specifically on that calendar issue if we're ever going to get that conversation off the ground.
Final question for you, and we'll let you go. We appreciate your time here on Catholic Sports View. We mentioned you're in your sixth year. What else is on your list when you'd like to kind of wrap up your career as the commissioner? You're a young man. You probably got 10 or 15 more years to go if you wanted to do this, but are there some other things you have on your list that you'd like to get accomplished while you're still in the position?
Well, sure. I mean, there's never been a day that I've been here where I haven't thought to myself, you know, what is it that we can do that we're doing now that we can do better? Certainly, our focus in the immediate short term is this competitive playoff model. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got, this is a starting point. We've been saying very clearly, this thing it's going to breathe. I mean, this isn't, what we're doing today is going to continue to evolve. We're going to tweak it. We're going to get better. This is, I think, one of the most significant changes this organization's had in its 104-year history. I mean, this is a completely different way of doing business, but yet we think it's so fair and gives so many more student-athletes and schools an opportunity that, you know, that's something that we're just really excited about evolving and growing. And so that's going to be a focus here definitely in the next few years. I want to walk away when the time comes and say education-based athletics is in a great place. I think it is now, and we have to keep continuing to celebrate it and what it does for the young people we're lucky enough to serve.
Commissioner Rob Weigert, we appreciate the job you've done and continue to do, and we wish you luck along the rest of this school year, and thanks for joining us here on Catholic Sports View.
Bob, you're welcome. It's been my pleasure, and I'll look forward to talking with you anytime.
We'll step aside real quick here on Catholic Sports View, and we'll be back right after this break. Stay with us here on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Sports View here on Immaculate Heart Radio. Joining us now is the head water polo coach out at Servite High School, and that's Andy Kaufman. Coach, thanks for taking a couple moments to talk with us.
My pleasure.
Let's start. What are your earliest memories of water polo for you and how you got interested in the sport?
My early childhood, I grew up in Arizona. So I had a good swim background, and then we moved to California, to Fresno, where water polo was there. We didn't really have that in Arizona. And I was playing football, but my better friends were playing water polo. And so I just kind of gravitated towards that sport. And because of my friends and with my swim background and some good aggression I excelled right away at it and enjoyed it a lot.
I was going to say, at what point did you find out, hey, I'm pretty good at this sport and this is something I really want to pursue?
You know, I was hooked by the time I was a freshman in high school. I started in junior high. Again, I was blessed with a certain size and some speed, and I figured out that right away I was competing with the older kids, and that kind of propelled me into going, hey, I want to see where I can take this and what I can do with it.
Were you happy with your high school career? Was it something you knew you'd had a good high school career and you wanted to pursue? We'll get to your college career in a minute, and that's obviously quite extensive, but at what point did you know you could go to that next level?
You know, in high school, it was just something that I was always really driven. I had a high motor, and usually I was able to outwork people. And then when you kind of hone in your skills, those start to kind of pay off. I had quite a unique path in high school, actually. Like I said before, I grew up in Arizona. My dad was a Sears manager, and he got moved, transferred or promoted, you know, every 4 or 5 years. So actually, after my freshman year in high school at Clovis High School, we moved to Reno, Nevada. So that was jarring. They had water polo there, but it wasn't quite the level or the demand that I was used to in California.
Sure.
At the same time, you know, looking back and as an adult, it was a blessing in disguise. The time I was there, one of the best club swim coaches in the country, Ed Spencer, was there, who's one of the top guys at U.S. Swimming now. And when I got there, I was a water polo player that could sprint the 50 freestyle pretty fast. And the first event I made nationals in was the mile. So with under his training and where that took me, swimming picked up, but that swimming speed and that endurance translated directly to water polo. And my parents realized that I had a skill and that I could have the ability to go play in college. And we kind of came to the conclusion that I wasn't going to get highly recruited in Reno, Nevada. I actually was able to convince them to let me move in with my best friend and go back to Clovis, where I started high school. So I actually graduated there and attended there my senior year and had a great, great senior year.
Did you ever think swimming was your future rather than water polo? And you know, the two were so linked, obviously, but
yeah,
at some point you'd have to pursue one or the other, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I would say my generation is kind of one of that last generation where guys would do both. You don't see that as common anymore. Kids are just getting specialized a lot earlier. And for me, that swimming was a blessing in disguise. It gave me, you know, the motor to really excel and have the endurance to be the player that I was. So I think that was really important to that.
Visiting with Andy Kaufman, he's the head water polo coach out here at Servite High School. You end up at UC Irvine.
Yeah.
Under legendary coach Ted Newland over there. You know, it's got to be a dream to play in that program for that coach.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Coach Newland, besides my father, is, you know, the biggest influence in my life. And it was at times trying to play for the old man, so demanding. But how he shaped you, what he gave you, and, you know, how he cared for you, I mean, it was amazing. The connections and the camaraderie that Coach Newland linked us all through and kept everyone very connected. It was a very special experience.
Well, what were the highlights for you as a player at UCI?
You know, I'd have to say my senior year, I had a special group of guys. I would say we were pretty blue collar. I had a big freshman class, or my year was a big class, and we weren't blue chip players. We weren't highly touted recruits. And that's what Newland was really famous for, was kind of finding those diamonds in the rough and polishing them up. And we had probably one of the worst seasons the year before my senior year. One of the guys on the team was redshirting. He was an Olympian, so we were down. We had some injuries. I was coming back off of shoulder surgery and got cleared like the day before season. So I'm just saying, because that set up this great senior year where we were ranked number one, more weeks than any other team, and the number one seed going into Mount Pax. We didn't do as well as we would have liked to and make NC2As, but it was a dream season. Not only the success, but the people that I had that success with is unforgettable.
Got a chance to join the national team. How was that opportunity?
Well, I mean, I would say joining is, I mean, I was asked to go out there and train and try and make the team. I was probably one of the lower level guys on the totem pole out there. And I was actually invited to go out there when I was a sophomore in college. And I think that John Vargas, the coach at Stanford at the time, like I said before, my swimming was a big contributor to my success in water polo and training. And I think he just liked the low guy on the totem pole kicking everyone's butt in conditioning sets and using it as motivation. And he liked my toughness and that, but that was a great experience. Being able to train against Olympians when you're a college player and then go back to play your college games gives you a lot of confidence. It definitely was another way to take my game to the next level and then, learn things that I apply as a coach today.
And then a chance to play professionally? Have that opportunity present itself.
Well, water polo, you got to really seek out the opportunities to go above and beyond and play outside of college when you're in the United States. I was putting on a tie and doing commercial financing right when I graduated, sitting behind a desk, hated it. And I had a connection in Australia, and they were looking for a player my type and caliber, and I didn't have to think it over long. You know, I probably made the decision at that desk, and again, it was one of those great experiences that water polo gave me. I was on a really good team. We were in the finals, and again, the relationships and living in another country was all great experiences.
We're visiting with Andy Kaufman, the head water polo coach out here at Servette High School on Catholic Sports View this week. At what point did coaching maybe start to circulate in the back of your mind? Was it ever something you thought about, or did it just sort of fall into your lap? I mean, I talked to so many coaches, and there's just so many different paths to coaching. What was your path eventually to get there?
Well, so many things contributed to. I already talked about Coach Newland and how he led and coached people. My father was my first coach in T-ball and throughout baseball till I was in junior high. So I had those strong influences of coach-type people not only coaching me, but, bringing me up. Combine that with my passion for water polo. And again, I go back to that working experience. You know, you kind of get into that, this is what you're supposed to do, graduate and get a good job. And it just wasn't me. And it just was kind of calling to me. I had my friend and teammate, Dan Klatt, who's the coach now at UC Irvine for the women's team and is also assistant for the women's national team. When he got hired for that job at our alma mater for the women's team, he called me to be his assistant, and the rest is history.
Yeah, the opportunity to go back to UCI, was that just too good to pass up?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't coaching full-time. I was still helping out. I was back from Australia. I was actually, because I liked the sports, the preparedness and the camaraderie, I was looking into being a firefighter and starting to reflect in those that I wanted to live that kind of lifestyle where you have that camaraderie, you're training for a purpose, you're trying to be a better person, you're trying to hone your skills at whatever craft that is. Coaching just seemed the right fit. And yes, my alma mater, which was the final piece to, making me a player, it was a dream to go back there and coach.
You coached the women's team at UCI. Are there big differences in women's water polo versus men's water polo?
Yeah, I mean, there are and there aren't. I would say the biggest difference with women is they actually grab a little more, and that's just almost due to the suits. There's more places to grab because they have more suit covering their body, so there's, I would say that women tend to do that a little bit more. I mean, just like any sport, the shots aren't as hard or the speed of the game isn't as fast, but the tactics are generally the same. And when you get, when you watch our women's national team play, I mean, there's men's college teams that they could beat, no doubt. But I think the biggest difference sometimes is just dealing with the different genders. One of the things that really honed me in as a coach in that first coaching experience is they don't want to be treated different. They want to be, treated like women and coached like boys, coach them hard. And that was a valuable lesson for me. And again, created some great relationships while having that experience.
The whole time you're coaching there, you're also going to Corona Del Mar, which is, one of the great programs in Orange County, one of the great locations, one of the great arenas there for water polo in all of Orange County. Was there a thought, hey, maybe go towards the high school, side of coaching, or was it always maybe I want to stay in the college side?
I'm blessed to be in Orange County to do it. As they say, the mecca of water polo, but, you know, opportunities are far and few between, and even to make a living at it. So at UCI, when I was coaching there, and I was really just trying to make ends meet. I was still young then and playing and coaching private lessons. And yeah, I ended up over there as an assistant, in fact, with Barry, his first year, who's still there. But it was just another great experience coaching with a guy like Barry and learning from the high level calibers they have. And even you know, how they do their feeder program there and all that. It's just a great water polo environment at Corona Del Mar, and, you know, just another great experience I had working my way up.
We'll take a break here on Catholic Sports View. We're visiting with the head water polo coach at Servite High School, Andy Kaufman. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
The passing of a loved one is a difficult and often sorrowful step in life's journey. The helpful and supportive staff at the Cathedral Memorial Garden Cemetery, located on the 34-acre iconic Christ Cathedral campus in the center of Orange County, are here to assist you and your family through this transition. The more than 1 acre Cathedral Memorial Gardens is unique in Orange County, offering a central location, serene garden-like grounds, majestic fountains, and a dramatic statuary, all set within the soaring architectural gems of the Christ Cathedral campus. Cathedral Memorial Gardens now has beautiful glass front niches. Single, companion, and family four spaces are now available with interior LED lighting with decorative trim that will display your loved one's urn with dignity forever. For more information, please visit memorialgardens.christcathedralcalifornia.org or contact 714-489-6102. 714-489-6102.
Welcome back to Catholic Sports View here on Immaculate Heart Radio, and we're visiting with Andy Kaufman for a couple of minutes out here at Servite High School, and he's the head of the water polo program out here. And Coach, you know, where we left off, you were doing some coaching with Corona Del Mar as well as over at UCI, coaching the women over there. You end up at University High School at some point, and again, it's opportunities, right? So, you know, how does that opportunity kind of present itself to you?
Well, I was also coaching at SoCal. At the time.
Oh, club team polo. As well, right.
And the university job opened up, and it was kind of that first head coaching. I was a head coach as a club coach, but university opened up. It's a program that had been pretty storied in Orange County. Had some Olympians in the 70s and obviously in the hotbed. And it worked out close because I was still at UCI. So, again, it was a great experience to kind of take over that program and build it into a top 10 team in the county for a couple years that I was there. And again, another great experience and great relationships that were made at that place.
Seems like there's never a shortage of great water polo players, especially in this neck of the woods. Do the good players just sort of gravitate in, or there's just so many that there's enough to go around for all the good programs here in Orange County?
Yeah, I mean, there's an ebb and flow to just sometimes, you know, kids develop and what high school they end up at, and sometimes there's three or four of them. I mean, I think that, and some of them, some guys choose based on athletics. But yeah, it's overall, the competitiveness of Orange County is pretty spectacular. You know, I think this year is a great example of parity. Modern Day kind of got knocked off, and you have these other teams that they've been kind of coming and knocking at the door, but they're finally there. And I think that just says a lot about what we're talking about the talent with Huntington Beach, Orange Lutheran, and, you know, the perennials that are kind of always in the mix with Corona Del Mar and Newport. Yeah, there's just a lot of talent in Orange County.
Yeah. You mentioned Modern Day, and, of course, the program that, you know, Chris Segesman has built over there is great. You know, this program here, you're in your second year here at Servite. It seems like it's a little bit of a changing of the guard. You know, the Coach Barnetts are sort of retiring and going by the wayside, those kind of legends. And it's a new group of young coaches like yourself that are coming up and continuing on the game. You know, is that exciting to be able to pit wits against, you know, some of your contemporaries like that as well?
It's been fun. I mean, I've been doing that, obviously only at Servite for 2 years, but seeing those same faces, club or when I was at university. And yeah, it is fun when you have those teams that are matched up evenly and you feel like you're going to wits with another coach. That's enjoyable for a coach. But at the end of the day, it's the players making the plays, and I, you know, I always say they make you look good. But it is fun to get in those battles. And one of the things that I think that, again, I got from Coach Newland is the preparedness that you need to have as a team. And you always have the things that you do that are your staples and make up your identity. But there's things that you have to adjust for from teams to teams. And I think that's what makes practices fun and interesting as you prepare and make those adjustments. But it's definitely fun. And I think it keeps the kids motivated with the change and going, okay, this team, we had to do this. And this team has a center that we need to. So all those things are fun to change up and keep me motivated as a coach mm-hmm. and engaged. And I think the kids too.
Speaking of motivation, was it as simple as the chance to be in the Trinity League, the chance to coach maybe on a little bit of a bigger stage? What led you here to Servite?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I think from a personal standpoint, those are things that you want to achieve, and Servite has certainly not been at the top, and you want to be the person to take them there. It is a process. That prestige of the Trinity League, the prestige of Servite, the history of Servite, Coach Sprague, really is the one that put Servite on the map. I know when I came to Orange County to go to UC Irvine, I didn't know a lot about the high school polo in the county, but because you're in the water polo world, you hear things, and Servite was one of those names you heard. And it would be really nice to bring Servite back to that prominence that they were kind of used to in the late 90s.
How do you go about it? I mean, how do you set about what's your plan to put this program, you know, back on the map and to get up there with the modern days and programs like that, that have been historically so good over the years?
I think it's not a secret. You just got to work hard. You got to stay at it. And water polo is just one of those sports. There's not an off season. And I think you got to get kids to buy into the sport they're playing and what it takes to be great. Because water polo is... as physically as demanding it is, because you're going all the time, that physical demand drains you mentally. So I think those are the things that I want to focus on with these kids. Obviously, like I said before, players make you look good. I mean, if we are lucky enough to attract good players that come in here that modern day is attracting or transfers they're getting and whatnot, that would be great. But my plan is to develop the freshmen coming in. You know, right now, like, for instance, this year, we had some freshmen that had great experience. We had two freshmen on varsity. We had some freshmen that came in that never played water polo before and started because they're at Servite. So it's a good mix of training those kids and balancing it all. And, you know, as long as our process is right and we're approaching it the right way, I think the success will be a part of that process.
Andy Kaufman is our guest on Catholic Sports View. He's the head water polo coach out here at Servite High School, trying to get this program turned around back on the map here, especially in the tough Trinity League. You mentioned that, you know, the players. Obviously, you know, you're as good as the players you have on your roster. Obviously, it's unique here at Servite High School and that it's a Catholic school. Kids looking for a Catholic education. Is that the way you're able to attract some kids that come here that want this sort of a unique education?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, Servite talks about that Servite difference. And, you know, that's something they're getting in the classroom, they're getting socially and in athletics as well. Like I mentioned previously, you know, we're getting kids, some kids that were trying to compete in the Trinity League, that they just started playing it here. So their experience is lacking, but that makes no difference to me. To me, I want to attract the kid that just wants to work hard, they want to be positive, and whether they're a starter or a bench player, they are giving it their all, and they are trying to hone in their skill that they're spending tons of hours each day practicing and being the best that they can be. When I think about that, you know, and that kid that we're trying to attract, I always think of a John Wooden quote about not letting what you can't do affect what you can do. And that's what I think kind of epitomizes the Servite kids. They're gritty. They find a way to make up differences they maybe don't have in physical attributes or speed or whatever it is. And I mean that across the board for all of our sports. So we're trying to attract that kind of kid that wants to be a better man.
Is today's water polo player different than the one maybe you were, you know, not too many years ago? Or is water polo still water polo?
I think it's still water polo. Personally, I think the differences I see are kids, like I said before, kind of are getting specialized earlier. Mm-hmm. So when I was growing up and doing the sport, you kind of transitioned from swimming. You had this amazing swim skill. So now you have kids that don't have that background. So I would just say sometimes that, like, you might have to spend a little more time on just swimming as part of water polo. I think another thing is we're USA, we're a baseball country. Everyone knew how to chuck rocks and throw baseballs, and I just don't think that as much kids are participating in that arm action that you need in water polo. Is something that I remember not spending a lot of time on as a player because you always had that. And I those are just some little differences that I notice in today's athlete. But for the most part, the tactics are the same. The movement is the same, and, you know, the water's still wet.
Obviously, we know the sport is so popular here in Southern California. Do you see it growing nationally?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And worldwide, it's huge, too. There's other countries that have been in water polo, but nationally, right, it seems like it doesn't have the... You know, we're in the hotbed, as you said, here in Southern California.
Yeah, sometimes I think we're blinded here to how big it really is. I mean, even in California, there's people that don't know it or have it. But I like to think it's growing still. I know the women's side seems to be growing. And I think that the college game really drives that. It's the opportunities. I mean, that's what kids are looking for to supplement their education. And it seems to me that on the women's side, they've been able to add more programs. They did just add San Jose State back on the men's side. That's a positive sign for our sport. You have other schools that weren't here that have programs, like when I was in college, like Concordia. I just hope we can maintain and continue to grow. And again, obviously the women, again, did tremendous things by promoting their sport, by being so successful at the Olympics the last 8 years, by winning gold.
Is that something you put on your shoulders too as a coach, trying to get these kids a chance at the college level, the ones that are good enough to play at that next level?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I'm here coaching and because of my love for it. And if someone else has that same love and want to continue to play beyond Servite, I want to be able to facilitate that path for them. I think the training that I give them and not only what we do tactically and physically, but being on time, being accountable, all those things. I mean, I'm trying to simulate the same environment as close as I can to a college environment. So hopefully that's putting them in a great place already. You know, like I tell the kids all the time, though, academics is the key, because if you can't get in, you can't play. And it's nice that I've been in it so long, and like guys like even Chris, like who was a rival, Chris Sagisman at Mater Dei, was a rival of mine at UCI. And to see everyone grow up and now we're putting kids on that path, it's a special thing. And the connections we have with the coaches that we played for or played against that are now coaches, yeah, I use those connections to put my kids in the best possible spot for them to continue on.
We want to thank you, Coach, for taking a couple minutes to join us here on Catholic Sports View. Good luck to you, and we'll be following the Friars the rest of the way.
Thanks, appreciate it.
I want to thank my guests this week, and I want to thank you for listening to Catholic Sports View here on Immaculate Heart Radio. My name is Bob Gibson. If you want another chance to listen to any of our programs, go to OCCatholic.com/radio and click on Catholic Sports View. Again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week right here on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Kevin Vann and Catholics from throughout Southern California on December 11th at 1 p.m. for the second annual Catholic Hockey Night at the Honda Center. Purchase discounted tickets to watch the Ducks take on the Ottawa Senators. Stay after the game to cheer on Servite Catholic High School and Santa Margarita Catholic High School as they take to the ice for a special exhibition game. For tickets, go to nhl.com/ducks/tickets/Catholic Night or visit OCCatholic.com.